earth, sky.
People who live in this part of the world have a very long tradition, thousands of years, of using walruses. They're very much part of their perception of the world and of their diet and their sense of identity. For them, it's very important to have walrus in their world.
You're listening to Anthony Fischbach, and this is Earth Sky's Clear Voices for Science. Fischbach is a wildlife biologist with the U.S. Geological Survey. In the summer and fall of 2010, he tracked the movement of walruses in the Arctic. He says their way of life, especially for female walruses and their calves, is being threatened by melting ice. He spoke with Earth Sky's Beth Lebwohl.
Your walrus study is happening right now. So what are you seeing?
Walrus game has really changed for these adult female walruses. They normally spend their entire summer up in the Chukchi Sea, which is a sea between Alaska and the Russian Far East. It's a vast, shallow sea, and these walruses feed on clams there. It's a very broad sea, and to get to the middle of the sea is a long swim from land. Previously, walrus got to the middle of the sea by riding on sea ice flows. In recent years, these sea ice flows have melted and moved north over deep water where walruses have nothing to eat. When that ice is gone, they've been forced to come ashore to rest. So it's a real different game for walruses. Suddenly they're stuck on shore, and then they have to commute out to these clam beds where they feed.
That presents a difficulty, doesn't it, when they have to commute to the middle of the sea, because that's where all the delicious and nutritious food is, isn't it?
That's where the richest clam beds are further offshore. But really, we're just learning where all these clam beds are. It's a big aspect of our study is to understand where the good food is for the walruses. But it's also a big part of our study to understand what it costs for these walruses to commute from their resting spot on shore to the clam beds, or to commute from just simply an ice pan where they roll off and get down to their feeding right away.
Okay, now when did this start happening?
Basically, the sea ice in summer has really been melting and dissipating far to the north over deep waters. So 2007 was the first year. It didn't happen in 2008, and that's interesting because that was the one year where we had ice melt out so far into the north, further up into the Arctic Ocean, that it actually released a bunch of thicker ice, this multi-year ice, and that got directed over to where the walruses are by currents and such, and the walruses were able to use that, and they never had to come ashore.
Okay, so in the summer and fall of 2010, what is the day-to-day happening?
Yeah, it's really amazing because so many animals have come ashore. This year is so different from previous years. You know, historically, there have been tens to hundreds of walruses that come ashore, just a few. But then 4 years ago, for the first time, we saw large numbers come ashore, thousands. Now this year, we're seeing tens of thousands coming ashore. When they come ashore like this, because they're walruses, they like to be right next to other walruses, so they get packed in there shoulder to shoulder. When there are calves in there, the mothers have to spend a lot of time kind of defending the personal space of that calf so it doesn't get squished by neighbors. So it's a very active group of animals. They're always kind of jostling around, pushing each other. The female Swiss calves will be poking at neighbor walruses, kind of defending their calf and their personal space.
Is the melting of sea ice the only reason this is happening? And is this, do scientists believe this is connected to climate change, not connected to climate change? What's the story?
Yeah, I'm a wildlife biologist, so I just can tell you what I've observed. Basically, walrus have come ashore when there's no ice left. So I'm able to see what ice is there using satellite images that are available to anybody online. I map out where we see walruses or where we track walruses, and as I'm tracking the walrus and I see the ice disappear, suddenly I see those walruses come ashore. From this, I conclude that when the ice is absent, walrus need to go someplace to rest, and they choose to go to shore.
Okay, tell me, how is this going to affect the feeding or reproductive season of, I don't know if that's the correct way to say that.
But the main effect it's having is that it's making it a real challenge for the adult females to take care of their calves. Female walruses are really great mothers. They spend a lot of time with their calves. In fact, their calf will stay with them for at least a year or maybe two And in fact, during the first year of a calf's life, it eats almost nothing but mother's milk. In fact, it won't have any food other than its mother's milk until November, and these calves are born in May. So throughout the summer and autumn in the Chukchi Sea, when they normally would be resting on ice, the best feeding beds are offshore. So the females prefer to be out there. There's some regions out there that are typically 50 to 150, 200 miles offshore, and we see them occupy these regions throughout the summer. When that ice dissipates, they come ashore. And when they are on shore, then they go back out to these regions to feed. So suddenly they're no longer just hopping off, rolling off of a piece of ice and feeding directly underneath them. Now they're having to get in the water and swim a long distance, feed there, come back and rest afterwards.
Okay, so it's affecting the moms. Is it affecting the males differently?
The boys have a lot less to worry about. They don't take care of the calves. They're not at all involved in the care of their offspring. They're also different from the females. They have this unique adaptation where they actually have these inflatable pouches underneath their shoulders, which they can fill with air, and they can get some flotation from that. So they can rest at sea, whereas the females can't. The females really need to be resting on something like a piece of ice or land. So males may be able to continue to access these offshore resources, but our real concern is the cost it will have for the females.
How are you tracking all this, by the way?
We use satellite tags. They're small transmitters about the size of a hockey puck. We place it between their shoulder blades, and it's attached to their skin with a small anchor. We place it on them without ever using any drugs. We use a small crossbow that places the radio permanently between the shoulder blades, and it'll remain there for about 2 months. While it's there, it continually records the activity of the walrus based on its diving and its time in and out of water, and creates a diary for us.
How many walruses are you tracking right now?
Throughout the course of this year, we'll be tracking over 120 walruses.
At this point, you know, the study will continue, I think, until November, right? And so at this point, you're not exactly sure how this change in circumstance is changing their lives. You only know that it's making extra work for the moms, but whether it's going to reduce walrus population or, you know, cause a decline or make pups less healthy or anything like that, you're just not sure yet. Is that correct?
There's a lot of open questions as to how it's going to affect the survival of calves and the viability of the population. And other aspects of the study we'll be addressing. But the trouble with walruses is they live in a very difficult place to work. They spend 80% of their time in water, and it's cold water, and it's a very vast region where they are. To access walrus, you typically need to charter an icebreaker or ice-capable ship and travel far offshore. In order to find them, you have to fly aircraft far offshore over very dangerous waters. We've lost pilots doing this sort of thing. We've lost people doing this sort of tracking work. It's very difficult work to do. So everything we learn about walrus tends to be like one piece of the puzzle to get at the real answers of, well, how are they doing? Will they be able to make a living with these new conditions, with loss of sea ice? To really address those questions, we have to really look carefully at each piece of these puzzles of the puzzle and try to put it together. That's our challenge.
You've been listening to Anthony Fishbach, a wildlife biologist with the U.S. Geological Survey based in Anchorage, Alaska. To subscribe to this and other free science interview podcasts, visit the subscribe page at earthsky.org. I'm Jorge Salazar. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.